This is the Human-Centric Investing Podcast with John Deal, where we look at the world of investing through the eyes of our clients. Take it away, John.
Hello, financial advisors. This is John Deal, Senior Vice President of Strategic Markets at Hartford Funds. Welcome to episode 23 of the Human-Centric Investing Podcast. Joining me today is Leon Lebrecht. Leon is Managing Partner and CEO of LJPR, an RIA practice with over $700 million in assets. LJPR recently merged with Sequoia Financial. Welcome to the podcast, Leon.
Hi, John. Good to be here.
Well, today we're going to talk about how Leon uses research from the MIT Age Lab and Hartford Funds to differentiate his practice. So, Leon, let's get started. I mean, gosh, it's probably been a couple of years now since you invited me for the first time to come out and meet with a group of your clients. And I know since then, you've kind of taken the MIT content and ran with it. So I guess right off the top, Leon, why is it that you choose to share the insights from the Age Lab with your clients?
Well, John, having been to the Age Lab, thanks to you, by the way, I was just overwhelmed by all the different things that they're studying there, ranging from the font size of cars, you know, the car dashboards, to how you place the mirrors, to the Agnes suit. In fact, I'm looking right now at a picture of the Agnes suit, which is the aging suit. But the thing that struck me so much is the Age Lab's concept toward the phases of retirement, what we like to call the 8,000 days, or what you fondly call who's going to buy you ice cream. So I just thought that's been so remarkable and revolutionary. But probably the interesting thing is it's not what everybody else is talking about. Most of the people in our business are talking about, well, let's talk about your asset allocation. And I'm talking about, no one wants your bedroom furniture. You know, your kids don't want your dining room table. Let's talk about getting old. That's your biggest risk.
And, you know, you mentioned it. It's differentiating in a way, but how do you find clients react? And I guess we can't neglect the nuts and bolts of our business, right? The
right
kind of portfolio structuring. How do you blend the two? How do you blend the high level thoughts about retirement and lifestyle with the kind of core elements of nuts and bolts of financial planning? How do you mix those two, Leon?
Well, I think in any good client conversation, if I'm having a client conversation, the first and foremost thing is to get their attention. And asset allocation doesn't get their attention, but the content of the Age Lab gets their attention because no one's told them this. I've introduced a new concept to them. And the response I want from a client is, tell me more. So I'll say, who's going to buy you ice cream? And they go, what do you mean? I said, no, well, I know my buddy John Deal, and he's really good at this. He came out and talked to us about it. In fact, I really enjoyed it. In fact, I teach it now. And it's what's going to happen to your life after retirement? And almost inevitably, the response is, well, tell me more. And then somewhere in the far end of the conversation, we get on to how are we going to invest your assets, or what are we going to do with your required minimum distributions? So the real key is, it's the introducer. It's the disruptor. It's a disruptive piece of information that everybody should think about, but isn't thinking about.
No, it's a great point. You know, Leon, sometimes I talk to financial advisors, and let's face it, our training as advisors is very laden in the analytical and kind of the knowing all the strategies and the laws and the different options available to us. How do you think clients respond? I mean, it's one thing for an advisor to come with what they're comfortable with, but a lot of advisors, I think, are a little hesitant to bring up these topics because, A, they think, well, I'm not really an expert in the areas, right? But how do you think clients respond to this when you take this approach versus the typical, pushing the box of statements across the table and beginning to jump right into the analysis?
I think clients, for the most part, have vetted out almost every advisor before they see them. I mean, I actually, track my web traffic, and I know when a client's coming in that they've already looked on my website and looked on my LinkedIn, and they figured out by the time they made an appointment and came in, they know I know what I'm talking about finance. I think more importantly, they're looking for a relationship. And to me, the MIT content, the Age Lab content is relational. We're talking about your life. We're talking about your kids. We're talking about how you're going to be happier. We're talking about what your life is going to be like in longevity. And we're not talking about charts and graphs because you're not a chart or a graph. You're a human being. You're a breathing, living human being, unique. And you have a unique set of problems and set of solutions. And let's talk about those. And John, what I like to do is draw a circle and say, look, there's lots of risks. I said, you know, you got a whole bunch of different risks. You have the risk of the market going down and the risk of inflation. I said, but the biggest risk we face is the risk of you living to 100. And how are we going to do it? And what's that going to look like? And let's talk about that first. And then we'll talk about whether you're going to have enough money to do those things and what it's going to be.
Well, you know, Leon, as I think about this this content, you know, you were kind enough last year, or was last year, 2 years ago, when we met up at the Schwab Impact Conference. You were able to stand up at the end of my presentation to talk about similar topics, right? How you're using it. But one thing that impressed me is that, you know, oftentimes, you know, I get the call, or folks on my team or our advisors, consultants get the call to come out and present our content at client events, so on and so forth. But what impressed me is you've taken the time to learn to deliver this content yourself. Kind of talk to me a little bit about kind of what the motivation was behind doing that and the value you think you garner from doing that versus, quote unquote, calling in the expert, so to speak.
Well, first of all, I think, you know, as you and I know, over at the lab, they've pointed out to us that there's a new science of longevity planning. And I think that that's absolutely true, that in the future, we're not just going to be financial planners or estate planners. We're going to be longevity planners. And so that struck a note with me right away. I wanted to become someone who understood longevity. And of course, it interests me because, unfortunately, I'm starting to get to the age where longevity is important. And I have, you know, my mom's 96 and just passed this year. So I had, you know, I had a 96-year-old mother and watched her go through all these phases, literally from 1921 to 2018. And I watched the transformation in her life, and she never would have thought she was going to make it to 96 years old. So the idea was it brought about the idea that there was longevity planning for, and I like to give public presentations, and Hartford was kind enough to provide the slideshow, and I modified it and added some of my own things to it. But John, the surprising thing, I had 300 people come to the session. I had 300 people, of which 150 were clients and 150 were prospects brought by clients. We got an enormous amount of business out of it. And almost uniformly, the response was, I like the way you think. I like how you think. You're thinking about me and my spouse and my kids, and you're not thinking about my money. And that was a telling tale to me. I videotaped the presentation, and it's been viewed hundreds of times. I've gotten clients that said, hey, I watched your 8,000 days video. It's awesome. I want to come in and see you. So it's really that piece of it. It's being different. It's a differentiator, but it's also, are we really going to be in the longevity business? Are we going to manage that risk and help people with that risk? Or are we just going to help people with, you know, quantifiable standard deviation risk of your average index fund? I mean, that's where we got to really ask ourselves, how do we serve our clients best?
So, you know, one point is differentiation, but I think you mentioned it already. I mean, I think knocking clients off of their expectation, would you agree? Let's say, Leon, you have a prospect coming into your practice that you don't really know, you haven't really met them before. Perhaps they're a referral from an existing client. Would you say most of the time that client comes in with an expectation that you're going to jump right into the numbers and you're going to start the kind of the critical analysis component of the relationship right off the bat? And are they surprised when you do tap? Because it seems to me like the thing you gain from doing those presentations is that you align yourself with those clients.
I would agree with you, John. I have a lot of background. I'm a chartered financial analyst and a certified financial planner and a CPA and an attorney. So most people have a high expectation of, oh God, I'm not going to even be able to talk to this guy. And inevitably, I start out, we start talking about them, and we start talking about how long did your mom and dad live, and where did they live, and what was it like, and did you do anything on mom and dad's death? And they, you know, pretty soon they're opening up, and they're going, wow, this is a pretty interesting conversation. And then we start getting into the age lab ideas, and I said, you know, I was at the age lab, and we were talking about 8,000 days, and what it's like when you're faking it, what it's like when you're really retired, and what it's going to be like, the prescription phase where all you do is go to the doctor. And then they start laughing and go, yeah, you're right, that's really important. And then at some point, inevitably, the client looks at me and says, well, this sounds great. How do you do this? And then we get into the other part. Mm-hmm. And I find the simpler I make it, I go, look, this investing is simple. It's just not easy. You have to have discipline. You have to have a plan. You have to have patience, and you have to be repeatable. I said, and this is what I'm going to do on a repeatable basis. And almost, if I had to parse it out in an hour prospect meeting, I would say that 5 to 7 minutes is on the investment strategy, and the rest is on the overall plan and what's really going to happen.
So, you know, Leon, I think I know the answer to this question, but kind of would like your perspective on it. We just talked about kind of those client events, the outreach events where, you know, you might use slideshows and things like that, or stories from the Age Lab, so on and so forth. What about your one-on-one meetings with a client, either an existing client or a new client? How do you weave those same stories into your one-on-one conversations that you might tell at a client event?
Oh my gosh. The Agnes story, CVS story, the CVS person going and wearing the Agnes suit and figuring out that they couldn't open packages and they couldn't do things. That's an amazing one. And I like to talk about all the brilliant, you know, young PhDs and postdocs running around the Age Lab throwing Nerf balls at each other and stuff, and then figuring out which of 148 fonts is the right font to put on a display for people, and how the car got smuggled up into the Age Lab. So those are all really fun things. So I'm a storyteller at heart, and I love to tell stories. And so the stories of the Age Lab are perfect because we relate to them. We understand, you know, we all know someone who's gotten older and couldn't open a box of brownie mix. And we all know somebody, you know, who has a hard time seeing the display in their car. So, I mean, those are some of the cool things in there. And the Agnes suit is just like this total engaging story that everybody wants to hear about. I want to play with the Agnes suit. And of course, one of these days, I'll persuade you guys to loan me the Agnes suit so I can let people wear it. But I mean, that's something. Maybe if I do two more seminars with 300 people, you'll let me borrow the suit.
That'd be great. That'd be a great seminar in itself. Everybody jumping in the suit,
right?
And giving them some basic things to do.
Yeah, we should do that at Schwab. We should put the suit on, bring somebody up from the audience, and have them wear it. And I'll adjust them up to be 97 and tell them to go open a box of brownie mix.
There you go. Hey, on a similar but related note, I mean, you were kind enough to invite me to your practice out in Michigan, and got to meet a bunch of the people on the team. If you think back, Leon, I know you've been in the business for quite a while, and the business has changed since both you and I have joined it. But have you seen changes go on within your own team? Like, I guess my question is, based on some of the things we're learning and talking about, have you changed kind of the functions of people on your team over time? Has it become more about, you know, do you have a kind of a component of your team that talks to people about these kind of aging issues while others are more responsible for the analysis and analytical parts? Does everybody kind of do everything? Or how do you think about the structure of your team in light of what Joe Coughlin would call the future of advice?
So we have leaned much toward a specialty model. And in our new merger with Sequoia, it's even more so. We have high degree of specialization. So we have the opportunity for advisors to take a very, you know, a high degree of specialization in, let's just say, elder care or VA law or estate planning or planning for closely held business owners, those kinds of things. So the necessity of specialization is essential. We kind of looking at it more like the Cleveland Clinic, where you can have a general practitioner that tells you who you need to go see. And then they hook you up with the specialist who takes you through your nutrition, and somebody else takes you through your exercise program, and somebody else takes you through your heart conditions. And that specialization has become extremely important. I think from a holistic standpoint, longevity planning isn't as much of a specialty as it is a generalist's tool. We find that to be a tool to say, you know, you're going to have four phases of retirement. In that first phase, we have to make you enough money so you can go have fun. And in that second phase, we have to make you enough money so you can actually retire and find the right place to live. And in that third phase, we have to make you enough money to cover your healthcare costs. I mean, so those are, we find that generalization allows us to then find people who can bury into the specialized pieces. Like, when do you take your Social Security? Do you delay it or do you take it now? Or what kind of funds do you go by? So I've seen, John, in my 40 years of doing this, it went from the generalist to the jack of all trades, to fog a mirror and you're a client, to now we actually have targeted clients. We have specific client, you know, profiles we're looking for. We have a service profile that we optimize the client experience. And we even have optimal employment experiences. Who's the optimum employee we want? And what's the optimal employee experience? You know, we want people who are smart and sharp and like to work, but aren't slaves to their job, who want to have fun and really get a kick out of doing their job, that really love their job. So, I mean, that's what we found is that that aspect of optimization, optimizing the client, optimizing our advisors, that kind of works. If the people doing it are happy and the people getting the service are happy, it's a good process.
That, and that's why I asked you the question, Lee. I mean, I felt that when I met the folks on your team, but I think, you know, for advisors that are thinking, sometimes we know advisors know that things are changing, but they're not quite sure to do what to do about it. You know, maybe some of the things, one thing they could do is begin to assess the clients that they're serving, the talent that is on their team, and make sure that people are kind of working on the things that they're really passionate about. And you may see that, you know, the niches that you want to serve or the generalities that you want to serve kind of emerge out of that. It sounds like there's a whole science to how you've constructed your firm.
Well, it wasn't, it was part science and part art. You know, part of it was, what are you good at? And then what do you love to do? And what can you make money at? And if those circles can coincide in some kind of a Venn diagram, I go, okay, cool, go to that. You know, so we have people that have, you know, specialized in women entrepreneurs, and they love it. They, you know, the advisor just loves it. It's her passion. She's passionate about it. Every time she meets a woman entrepreneur, you can't get, you know, can't get her to be quiet about it. She's just, she's jumping up and down. And then we have people who are a little bit more quiet about it, and they want to talk about lump sums and the technicality of lump sum distributions. Good, go for it. Learn every single thing about it. And all the rest of us then will start steering data to them and say, hey, here's something on lump sums. Here's something on longevity. Here's something on, you know, on whatever, LinkedIn or whatever you want to go talk about. And it's rewarding. And it's great when you have enough scale to do that. Now we're getting to bigger and bigger scale. So it allows us to do that more and more and more.
Wow, that's awesome. So let me just ask you this, Leon, because I think as advisors start to become exposed to the content, the longevity solutions, ideas that are coming out of the Age Lab, and they begin to envision themselves maybe starting these conversations, the negative always comes out first, right? So they say to themselves, what if I sit down with someone and start saying, you know, who's going to change your light bulbs and how are you going to get an ice cream cone? And the person looks at me like I have three heads. I mean, do you ever run into clients who are not receptive to these kind of conversations? And if so, how do you handle that? And then I guess the flip side of that is it, are there clues that you look for in terms of what kind of clients might be most receptive to this content?
Well, I learned a long time ago to not try to sound like an expert in things I'm not an expert in. So I have a little secret weapon I use, and you happen to be my secret weapon. So I'll say, you know, my buddy John Deal from Hartford came out and did a seminar for us, and he was talking about something cool, and it was about who's going to get you an ice cream cone and who's going to change your light bulbs. And they go, what does that mean? And I go, well, he was basically talking about what's your lifestyle going to be like. You know, literally, you know, 10 years from now, who is going to change your light bulbs? Are you going to get up on a ladder? Are you going to let your, you know, if it's a spouse, a female spouse, I'll say, are you going to let him get up on a ladder when he's 80 years old and fall off and break his hip? And they, and inevitably the nods start and they start. And if I keep it out of, I don't say this is my idea. You know, I say, I was talking to Dr. Joe, and Dr. Joe came up with this great thing, and Dr. Joe's brilliant. He was a nuclear scientist and all this stuff. And he forgets more before breakfast than I know. And this is what he was telling me. And everybody goes, well, I want to hear more about that. So you don't have to introduce as an expert. And I would say anybody who's feeling, you know, I don't know. I've never tried to hold myself out as an expert. I go, hey, I learned about this, and what do you think? And I learned about this, and what do you think? And that's so innocuous. It almost, you know, no one can be too argumentative about it. You know, one of the greatest pitches in the world is, hey, let me run something by you. Let me ask you a question. What do you think of this? As opposed to, let me tell you this. And as soon as you ask that, the guard goes down and people go, oh, he wants my opinion. What does he want my opinion about? Something from MIT. That's a really big school. Wow. I want to learn more.
It's funny you mentioned that as a secret weapon, because truth be told, Leon, I use the same weapon when I'm speaking to advisors, because if they say, John, this stuff is crazy, you know, that my clients are never going to like this stuff. I say, well, you know, it's just what the guys at MIT say. Now, first of all, when you bring that credibility, right, it's you have to be pretty sure of yourself before you start questioning the researchers up at MIT. But nonetheless, I think your point is valid.
Yeah, I think you know, and it also is humbling, and I think people like humbleness. And I think, you know, and you're a humble guy, John. I know you well enough to know that. You're a humble guy and a fabulous presenter, and you clearly could be an expert in this stuff, but you don't hold yourself out to be one. You hold yourself out to be a student of it like I do. And that's what I say to people. Look, I'm just a student. I just want to learn as much about retirement as I can possibly learn. So these are things I'm learning along the way. I am not the master. I am just the student.
So, Leon, a related question to your clients and one that I get quite often is, look, I know some of the types of clients that you serve. You know, they range in form of net worth, but certainly you have a fair number of high net worth clients that your firm helps on a daily basis. And, you know, sometimes the reaction I get to some of the concepts from MIT is, John, you don't understand. My clients have enough money to buy whatever it is that they're going to need. How do you see high net worth clients reacting to this kind of information? Is it the same way that someone at a lower net worth would, or are there specific things you single out, or what has been your experience in the high net worth area?
It is the basic concepts are still the same. Everybody mm-hmm. goes through the four phases of retirement, or unfortunately, maybe they go through them really short in a very short period of time, but they all do. So if I have $40 million, I still have to figure out where I'm going to retire. And if I have $40 million, I still have to figure out that my kids don't want my dining room table, which they don't. And probably they don't want all the other junk that I have. So, you know, it's really a lot of stuff that they don't want to have. So the questions of where I'm going and what I'm doing in these different phases are there. So I think when we're talking about the four phases, the first phase of faking it, where I'm just simulating retirement, that resonates whether you got $40 million, $4 million, or $400,000. Hey, I'm retired. I'm going to go out and play golf every day, and I'm going to go do this, and I'm going to clean the garage, and I'm going to go, you know, take a class. And, you know, pretty soon you go, you know, sooner or later, I'm actually retiring. And, you know, I can't go hang out with my buddies from work forever. And so it's, I think the net worth size changes the timber of the conversation, but doesn't change the conversation itself. Now, it does a little bit on the medical side.
I couldn't agree more. And that is indeed the exact response I give to people. It's not that those clients don't have the resources to do whatever they need to do. In many instances, is that they don't know what they need to do. Right. So, just connecting them with those resources. And I would argue, and I think you'd agree, that some of the clients who are most socially isolated are those who were so successful in their businesses or their professions that one day they decide to totally change. They're going to sell their business. They're going to retire from that long-term profession, pursue something else. Sometimes they're the ones that feel most at a loss because no longer does the world revolve around them and decisions that they have to make. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I see it all the time. And it is the successful entrepreneurial situation. In fact, I'm working on this concept of helping entrepreneurs achieve transformation instead of transaction. What I see a lot is business owners get into the transaction. I'm going to sell the business and I'm going to go off and do XYZ. And I go, stop. What's it going to look like after? Where are you going to be after? Who are you going to talk to? You right now see your significant other, you know, 6 hours a week on a conscious basis when you're not sleeping or working or playing golf and trying to get the business going. How's that going to change when you add 56 hours of contact time? You know, and you think you're going to go see your kids. Your kids talk to you at holidays right now. Where's that going to be? And you start that little dialogue and say, just tell me what it's going to be like. Just tell me. Tell me the story of what it's going to look like. And boy, you should see the change on their face, John. They go, well, wow, what do you, you know, maybe you're right. And I said, you know, why don't we talk about how this transformation is going to take place? Maybe you don't just sell it and walk off in the sunset. Maybe you sell part, you know, you sell it and work for a little while and do some other things. Let's get you doing some volunteer stuff. Let's find something meaningful and purposeful in your life. You know, let's go do some things that make sense to you that'll make you happy and make other people better. And you go in that phase and people start saying, wow, you're right. And usually by this time, the spouse is nodding and going, yep, listen to him. He's talking about me. I'm not going to have you alphabetizing the spices, you know, which is what they think they're going to go do.
Right. Well, hey, Leon, we've talked a lot about kind of the ways that you've communicated with your clients. So I guess my question is, you know, we put out tons of different types of collateral from white papers, depressions, presentations, worksheets, so on and so forth. Are there any pieces that you find yourself using more often than not? Or is it mostly the aside from, I'd say, the stories, or do you leave it just at the story level and then use your own tools and planning instruments after that? How do you use, or maybe you don't, any of the collateral that we make available?
The app, the piece on apps is great. That's my favorite. Mm-hmm. So I use that all the time. I think that's one of the best pieces where I have different apps that retirees can use. And I think that's a remarkable thing. I wish I'd thought of it. So it's a really, really good one. I also like the workbook. I think the workbook is useful and it's helpful. The workbook works better in a smaller group setting, not a 300-person mm-hmm. setting. But
right.
if I'm going to do the session for 20 people or 30 people, so I might be doing it for a set of estate planning attorneys or a group of elder care attorneys, that's where I think that workbook is a lot more handy. But boy, the apps, that app piece is preposterously good. I really, really like that.
Well, thanks. Well, hey, Leon, we're closing down on our time together today. I guess I have one last question. I'd like to put yourself in the shoes that we were in a couple of years ago, where maybe you were first exposed to some of the things that the Age Lab was doing in the initial phases. And I guess my question is, if there were one or two things you would say to fellow advisors that they should think about integrating into their business because of kind of the thinking of the Age Lab, what would you recommend an advisor do today to kind of take advantage of some of these ideas?
Well, obviously, get accustomed to the idea. So I met you via Schwab, one of the Schwab conferences. And mm-hmm. after I saw you work, I think I came up to you and said, hey, let's talk. I want to see what we can do together. Because I thought you resonated with the message to the other people. So sometimes take a look back and sit down and just sit back and listen to what people want to know more about mm-hmm. and accommodate what they want to know. So I think people want to know a lot more about longevity. And I thought about you when I was doing a session for the International Association of Chiefs of Police. And I had a group of chiefs, these are chiefs all over the country, and we have a niche in that area. And so I said to them, I said, my job in the world is to mitigate risk. And I said, I want you to think about risks you might have. And I said, you guys are cops, so you have a risk of your job. I said, probably more logically, you have a risk of getting run over by a car, or maybe a risk of a piece of plaque breaking loose in your artery. And I said, mm-hmm. but there's a bigger risk. You might live to 100. And what's that going to look like? And you see the looks on their faces, and you give them a long pause and say, what's it going to look like if you live to 100? And see, the funny part about it is we don't know what it's going to look like for every individual to live to 100, but we can at least start guiding that conversation. So I would say the most important thing is to understand that we as advisors serve. That's what we live to do. I live to serve. And in this case, we're serving better by giving the right dialogue. And I think the dialogue on longevity is just an enormous dialogue for people to do.
Well, Leon, again, as always, I can't thank you enough for your comments. It's great to hear it from someone who is successfully employing these ideas and thoughts coming from the folks up at MIT. And I just want to thank you for joining me on the podcast today.
Oh, John, always good to be with you. I'd rather be in person so we could talk about baseball and your kids, but we'll do that some other time.
Soon enough. Well, great. Everyone on the podcast today, I'd just like to say thanks for the time. And we'll look forward to talking to you again on a future episode of the Human Centric Investing Podcast. Thanks very much and have a great day.
This podcast is intended for use by financial professionals or in conjunction with the advice of a financial professional. It is intended to be educational in nature and should not be construed as individual investment advice or a recommendation or solicitation to buy, sell, or hold any security or to adopt any investment strategy. It does not constitute legal or tax advice or fiduciary advice pursuant to ERISA rules. The MIT Age Lab is not an affiliate or subsidiary of Hartford Funds.
Leon Labreck, LJPR Financial Advisors and Sequoia Financial Group are not affiliates or subsidiaries of Hartford Funds.